We have two perspectives now on the life of Jesse Jackson. Jackson has died at the age of 84, and we've been hearing this morning about an aide to Martin Luther King who went on to run for president.
America will get better and better. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive.
Whatever you thought of him, you knew that voice. That was his speech from the 1988 Democratic Convention. Our own Michelle Martin was there. And that was not her first encounter with Reverend Jackson. She followed his campaign as a local political reporter and then for a PBS Frontline documentary. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to start with that 1988 convention, one of his most famous moments. What was that moment like in the hall and for America?
It was electrifying, I think, in a way that may only have been matched some 20 plus years later when Barack Obama became the nominee for president, even though there was really no chance that Reverend Jackson was going to become the Democratic nominee. It was just a remarkable sense of just electricity in that hall and a sense that something had been achieved that many people did not think was possible.
He was on a stage where people did not imagine him being. It was the second time he'd run for president. He ended up being second in the balloting in the primaries behind Michael Dukakis. So that is one side of Jesse Jackson, but he affected a lot of people's lives. How did he affect yours, Michelle?
Well, exactly, Steve. We were talking about this actually some time ago, that I remember first encountering Reverend Jackson as a sort of a figure, as an idea, as a public figure when I was 9. And there was a local reporter in New York City where I grew up, named Melba Tolliver, who worked for the ABC affiliate, the owned and operated station, who was taken off the air because she had gone on vacation, had stopped straightening her hair and put her hair into an afro, or what we would call a natural. The station took her off the air, saying that it was a radical hairstyle. And so Reverend Jackson organized a picket of the station, and this went on for, what, some 10 days or something like that, until the station agreed to put her back on the air, wearing her hair as she chose. And I, in solidarity with Melba, stopped straightening my hair at that point, and I've worn it in a natural hairstyle ever since, much to the chagrin of my mother at that time. But it has become my signature, and that's how I first became aware that Jesse Jackson was someone to be reckoned with. Subsequently, as a political reporter, of course, I covered his campaign, and people forget, I think they see him as a towering figure in his own right, but I think what's really important to think about is his mentorship. Many of the people who worked on his political campaigns, his 84 and his 88 campaign, went on to become a force in their own right. I mean, the first Black county executive in the jurisdiction where I covered, or Black congressman. I mean, many people in the civil rights movement, of course, went into politics, but he not only became a figure himself, he trained other people. They cut their teeth on his national campaign, and that gave them the skills to go on and do other things.
Amazing. Michelle, stay with us. Layla's going to bring another voice into the conversation here.
Yeah, we're going to be joined now by Eddie Glaude. He's a scholar and author. And Eddie, you were coming of age as Jackson was running for president. What did he represent to you?
He was this extraordinary figure, larger than life. I was in 1984. I was there at the convention. I bumped into him in an elevator. I was 15 years old. He towered over me. And I just remember being in the convention, watching these conflicts. You know, I saw people boo Jackson delegates, boo Andrew Young, and even Coretta Scott King. But he was representing the cross section. You know, the as he put it, the desperate, the damned, the despised, the dismissed. And so, he was this kind of progressive icon for me, a way of being authentically yourself and trying to find your voice in a moment where a country boy from Mississippi didn't think he could do that.
Why were the Jackson delegates booing Coretta Scott King? What was going on at that moment?
Well, you know, I mean, this is insider politics. I mean, you know, Walter Mondale was running. You know, he was trying to, and, you know, of course you had the DLC and the controversy around Gary Hart. Remember this like it was yesterday. And, you know, the Jackson delegates were like, you know, why are you supporting Andrew Young? And these, why are you supporting Walter Mondale? You should be supporting Jesse. And there was this intense, shall we say, back and forth in that moment. But you have to remember that 84 campaign was an insurgent campaign. It was the Rainbow Coalition. You know, Jackson was organizing coal miners in West Virginia, moving through Appalachia, not just simply Black folk in South Carolina and the like. And it was just this extraordinary, shall we say, grassroots, progressive effort that predates Bernie Sanders and the like. And so there was this, conflict between Jesse's insurgent campaign and the powers that be in the Democratic Party.
What did you learn from your interactions with him and witnessing him from 15 years old on?
You know, what it means to be courageous in public. I mean, I learned a lot of what not to do, but I also learned what it meant to really stand on one's principles. You know, Jesse Jackson is so important culturally and politically. He changed the very ways in which the Democratic primary took place, right, by changing the proportioning of the delegates. Culturally, you know, people forget that, you know, Isabel Wilkerson was reporting in the New York Times that Jesse Jackson and others had us change our ethnic identification from Black American to African American, right? He was this figure who insisted on representing the voice of the least of these. We talk about that 88 convention where he talks about keep hope alive, but remember the last lines of the 84 convention. Our time has come. We come from disgrace to amazing grace. Our time has come. Give me your tithe. Give me your poor, your huddled masses. And he means so much to me today because we lose this giant in the midst of a country that seems to be turning its back on the very thing he dedicated his life to.
Now, for both of you, Michelle and for Eddie, looking back at this influential figure, you both interacted with him. Claude, you were at the DNC in 1984 when Jackson spoke. What is the sort of takeaway of this legacy for each of you? I'll start with you, Michelle.
For me, I think it's the importance of showing up. As I mentioned in the story, he set up these picket lines for this reporter that maybe most people in the country did not know. But it was important. He would show up. I remember during covering his campaign, there was often a lot of grumbling that he would show up at events late. But the part of the reason he was showing up at events late was that he was praying with someone. Someone mm-hmm. would call him and say, my mother is in the hospital. Can you come and pray with me? And he would go. Someone would say, I need some encouragement, or this person is in pain, or this person is in trouble. And he would show up. I think he stands for the importance of showing up.
And Eddie?
Speak truth to power. Be honest and authentic in how you move. And most of all, don't let your own sense of purpose and vocation get in the way of what you've been called to do.
Eddie Glaude, distinguished professor at Princeton University's Department of African American Studies, and our own Michelle Martin. Thank you to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.